Dobrynya from Primal Thrive. Welcome to Eyes Wide Open. Thanks for joining me, buddy.
Thanks, you.
Yeah, cool. And you've been on quite a journey to get here in the first place. So
yeah.
UK at the moment, but you've been traveling around South America.
Yeah, I've been there for 9 months. About like 3 weeks ago, I've been flying back from Mexico to Belgium. And yesterday I arrived in London and in Luton, and now at your gaff here.
You're my gaff here, yeah. Yeah, thanks for coming, man. But you, from here, you're going up to sweaty sockland, we call it, up to Jockland.
Scotland.
Yeah. Scotland.
Yeah.
What are you doing up there?
I'm going to hike, so around Loch Lomond. And then we plan to climb Ben Nevis, the highest mountain of the UK, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a climber anyway? Is that something you
do? Yeah, yeah. Last climb was in Ecuador. It's like the highest mountain of Ecuador, the Chimborazo. In total, 6,400 meters. They recommended me in Quito, the capital, that you can climb all of these crazy mountains around because they're all close by. So I decided, hey, I did the Ben Nevis like years ago. I quite enjoyed it. It's not really a challenge. So I was looking to challenge myself.
Yeah.
And that ties in, of course, to testosterone because you want to, you know, expand your horizon. And seeing that mountain was the challenge that I chose. I didn't climb it on the top because it was too heavy. We didn't have any oxygen, so you had to be very well trained. But I did reach 5,800 meters.
Wow.
So
proper climbing. Ben Nevis is more like a hill, isn't it?
Yeah,
I believe. It is.
Like 2,000 or so.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, the closest.
It's 3-4 hours up. So
the closest I get to a mountain is Snowdon. That's probably the nearest.
Snowdonia.
Snowdonia, yeah. The reason we're chatting today is because we follow each other on Twitter and I love your posts, and you are somebody who has become somewhat of an expert based upon experience in this whole phenomenon that we're seeing across the West and beyond in the collapse of testosterone in men and not middle-aged men, where it used to be expected that a man late 40s his testosterone started declining until, you know, he was an old man and didn't have much spunk left at all. But what's been happening recently, it appears, is that men's testosterone is collapsing younger and younger. The vitality of young men is under attack. And, you know, you're a young man yourself, and this is something that you've, you know,
I've experienced myself
and conquered. So tell us, give us a little bit of background on how you came into this space, this field, and what your take is on the whole situation with the testosterone phenomenon.
So how I discovered testosterone was quite by accident. Before, I tried all kinds of diets, like keto, vegetarian, vegan, to solve my own health problems. My health problems were a wide variety. I had gut issues, low energy, basically also no drive to pursue something. Although I wanted to do something, I didn't know how, or I couldn't take the risk, like low risk-taking behavior. So I kept searching. I was very, diligent in this search. And I found a doctor close by living to me, and I wanted to do a collaboration with her. I would be the nutritionist working together with her. And before we started our collab, she gave me a expensive and extensive blood work. So I did my blood labs, and she said that my testosterone was very, very high, like steroid levels high. And she asked if I was on a steroids or steroid cycle. And I said, no, I just eat beef liver, I go sunning, and I lift weights in the gym. And based on those levels, something, a light bulb went on, a switch went on, and I made the connection that my problems were solved and my testosterone had increased. So I went into the rabbit hole of male health and testosterone, and then I made all the connections and the links, discovered the studies that said that testosterone is declining since the 80s with about like 1.4% every year. And like this, I conquered my own issues and started coaching and guiding men to also optimal levels of androgens.
So it's, you know, it's easy for us to speculate about saying, okay, are men's testosterone levels collapsing because of the pollution in our environment, whether it's the food we eat, the environment, the air, the oxygen, the water, all those things. Yeah. But it seems to me that it might be a little bit more deliberate. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that it might even be an attack on men.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on the political dynamics of testosterone collapse? Because I'm not sure if I kind of 100% go with it, because the same people who would be inflicting it would also be on the receiving end too, because they live in the same environment as us. I don't know. Yeah. What's your ideas on?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's like an attack on testosterone specifically. Mm-hmm. I think there's just an attack on health.
Yeah.
And after World War II, we see the petrochemical industry booming. And petrochemical derivatives like plastics were discovered right after the Second World War. So plastics are extremely estrogenic. We call them xenoestrogens from the Greek xenos, which means foreign. So foreign estrogens that have actually a biological impact on our own hormones. And now recently they found that there are phthalates in the umbilical cords of children. So Yeah, these are xenoestrogens that are found in cosmetics, fragrances, skincare products, shampoo, but they are also used to make plastic flexible. So like water bottles would contain phthalates to make the plastic bottles like manageable and flexible. So these phthalates, these xenoestrogens are found even before the children are born. So in the fetus, when the fetus gets affected, that gives like a negative predisposition on a genetic level. So basically now we see children with a genetic weakness being born, and these phthalates are associated with shorter anogenital distance. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
It's between the anus. You could describe that one.
Yeah, it's the distance between the genitals and the anus.
Yeah.
And so for females, it's always shorter. And the shorter it gets, the more, you know, female-like it looks. For a man, it's always more than a female. It's like double or more. And this distance is determined by hormones. So if you are less exposed as a fetus to androgens like DHT and testosterone and more exposed to xenoestrogens or estrogenic substances, this distance will shrink. And this has major health consequences on boys. So they are more at risk for testicular cancer, undescended testicles, also smaller genitals, and lower testosterone.
Plastics have totally revolutionized our world, our ability to manipulate the world in our image, if you like. But at the same time, there's been terrible consequences from the use of plastics and the pollution that we see everywhere. And the fact that where we live, I chatted about this in the previous podcast, was about, you know, we live in plastic boxes from the paint to the floor.
Yeah, carpets.
You know, carpets, fake wood on the floor, which is just plastic, and paints are full of plastic. Mm-hmm. You know, but we don't seem to be able to escape this plastic prison that we've been placed in. And I guess the Just Stop Oil people, I don't support those at all, but I mean, are they telling us to end the use of fossil fuels? I can't see how that's going to happen, but is this the abuse of fossil fuels that's causing this whole plastic phenomenon that we're seeing?
Well, yeah, plastics are like derived from them.
Yeah.
So there is major interest, and it's also a big industry, and it makes life easier, right? Mm-hmm. So are there methods to maybe make the plastics less harmful? Probably they are, because technology is quite advanced. I believe they now have mushrooms or funguses that can degrade plastic. So we can recycle plastic. So there's no issue in, you know, environmental consequences if we use like natural methods.
You would think, wouldn't you, common sense would dictate, you think, okay, well, yeah, let's get rid of it. Why would they not want to get rid of it? But it seems to me like they're using the plastic pollution problem as a lever. Well,
what are you going to replace it by?
I know.
Yeah, like your phone is plastic.
Yeah. We'd have to go back to the Stone Age almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Plastics. Yeah. So it's either we have to invent something new.
Well, there's there has nothing to be invented. There's no need for that, because in the past we also had paint, right? Or we built houses from natural resources. So if we go back to what nature provided us, we don't need to invent anything, because it's already here for us. We just need to integrate it.
And so if somebody is affected by these xenoestrogens, I think we're suggesting that the xenoestrogens are responsible for reducing men's testosterone.
Yeah.
What kind of symptoms would a man be experiencing if he has been subject to this attack on his most potent male hormone?
So mainly estrogen dominance, and that...
So that means testosterone comes out, estrogen goes up?
Yes, yes. So the estrogen is very dominant. The xenoestrogens are binding to all kinds of receptors, or they are blocking receptors. So your hormonal household is completely, you know, confused. Signs are low testosterone. Being fat, so having too much weight on you, hair loss, poor thyroid function. So these xenoestrogens, or let's say endocrine disruptors, okay, chemicals that disrupt your endocrine system, your hormonal system. And we have three big groups, the plastics or the xenoestrogens, the halogens like fluoride, chlorine, and heavy metals. So they focus also on glands such as the thyroid, the pineal, and the pituitary gland, which also, of course, fabricate hormones. So if you have low thyroid function, hypometabolism, hair loss, those are all signs of either estrogen dominance or being exposed to endocrine disruptors.
But what would a man in his actual day-to-day life, what would be the physical symptoms he would experience? Would it be fatigue, or what were the things that you described before that you felt? How would, if someone's watching this podcast and they're listening to it and they're thinking, wow, this might be what this is, what I'm feeling right now, could we just...
No, you would have all the symptoms of low testosterone. What would that be? Basically, so inability to gain mass, muscle mass, and the inability to lose fat. And then a lot of health and mental consequences, mental health consequences. So how it affects your mind is that you're like less decisive, you're less motivated. So you have also lower dopamine. You can't take risks, or you don't dare dare taking them. So these kind of...
So all of the things that make you a man, basically.
Basically, yeah. The masculine traits, how you look, but also how you act.
Yeah, it's pretty... pretty serious stuff, really, isn't it? Because what's the society going to be without men to be able to run it? It's going to collapse. So what can people do? What can people do to resolve this on a basic level? Is there ways that they can turn this around?
So first thing would be preventing your exposure. So have a look with what you're washing your body with. So all shampoos, soaps, you have natural alternatives for that. And then your household... You know, cleaning products, personal care products, hygiene products, all of those you can basically bin and replace with natural alternatives. The main ones are like fluoride that you use in toothpaste, tap water, don't drink that, that's obvious. Also, plastic bottle water is not optimal. So the first stage would be to prevent your exposure and the ingestion, especially also on the skin. Everything that you put on the skin goes directly in the bloodstream, goes to the liver, it attacks like your endocrine system. And then the second thing would be to support your elimination pathways. So your liver is your main organ that cleanses all of these toxins. And there are certain pathways like methylation, which requires certain nutrients found in egg yolks, animal-based diets, cruciferous vegetables as well. To support those pathways to cleanse the xenoestrogens. And then you want to use something to actually bind them in your digestive system. And a good supplement for that would be charcoal. So activated charcoal is shown to bind to...
substance.
Yeah, exactly. Xenoestrogens like BPAs and stuff. So these are like three steps you can do to do something about the xenoestrogen exposure.
It seems like a really insurmountable task.
Yeah.
Because... we are so dependent and exposed to plastic. It's everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everywhere we look.
Now, the main things are your water supply, because we drink on average, 2 liters of water on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So if that's tap water, I've done experiments, Lawrence. I took my distiller, a water distiller, put a gallon of tap water in it, or no, plastic bottle water, and I distilled everything. And then at the bottom, you have the residues.
Yeah.
What I found was gross. It's just like plastic residues, but heaping spoons of them. And in an the oily water. In the water, and an oily substance as well. And this was for distilling 4 liters or a gallon of water.
Of tap water?
No, of plastic bottled water. Yeah. So 4 liters is, for the average person, 2 days of water consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much contaminants in that water, which was left behind on the bottom of the distiller.
So it seems water would be a really important
thing. If you can get clean water, you're like 50% of the job.
Well, if you distill the water, it's clean then, isn't it?
It's basically empty. So you need to put back some minerals in.
Salt or something.
Yeah, some salts. And,
So as a water source then, we need to drink mainly distilled water. But if,
not distilled, but that was just my experiment, because a distiller distills everything.
Yeah, so but what I'm saying is the distilled water has been cleaned. There's nothing else in it. There's
all glass bottled spring
water. Yeah. Very difficult to find now. There was no, unless you find Perrier. So what do you, when you're on the road, it's difficult to avoid, isn't it? You have to drink water, and you don't have a distiller with you, do you? So it's if you are forced to expose yourself to these plastic based poisons, how do you detox it once,
Well, you just keep supporting your liver.
Yeah.
An example, yesterday we went to a Romanian store and they had like Romanian bottled spring water in glass bottles.
You found the angle.
And it's like quite cheap, like £1.25 or so per bottle. It's going to be a bit more expensive, but that will, it's a return high return on investment for your health.
Yeah, it's funny you say, I was speaking to Podrick Flynn yesterday. It's a carnivore, and he's like a kind of a quite strict carnivore. And we were laughing about broccoli, about who the hell would eat broccoli if you weren't told it was healthy.
Yeah,
but you just mentioned cruciferous vegetables, which is broccoli, isn't it? So you're recommending broccoli, are you today?
Well, yeah, people fear vegetables of their anti-nutrients. I do see the point of going carnivore if you have really severe gut issues. But if you're healthy, you can digest everything. So I don't...
You're suggesting that the carnivore, a strict carnivore diet, is more like an elimination diet?
Yes.
For a period to restabilize your gut mainly,
Yeah, this is the thing. People see a healing diet as the holy grail, and they confuse it with a maintenance diet. So healing diet, the word says itself, it's healing. So you need a period of healing because you weren't eating optimally for years and now you got sick. So you need something like an elimination diet. But then people confuse it with like, oh, this diet helped me. Now I should eat like this for the rest of my life, which is not true.
So your diet then includes...
Everything. Yeah.
So you eat what you want.
Yeah.
How old are you?
26.
Okay, it'll catch up with you. Eating what you want will catch up with you when you're 45.
I would say I eat everything. So also plants, vegetables. Not that I'm like eating crap. I eat what is healthy.
I think hormones seem to be right at the tip of the public discourse at the moment. Largely, I think, because Robert Kennedy Jr., he's recently announced that he's going to run for president.
Yeah.
He's a Democrat. It gives people another option rather than Trump, someone who seems to be a bit against Big Pharma and against the system. And he looks quite buff for a man who's 69. Yeah. And we could already see he looked a little bit buff from his Joe Rogan interview. He's giving it that. But then he decided to take his top off at Gold's Gym on, I think it was Los Angeles Beach. He's lifting on the beach, but he's got a pair of jeans on. Did you notice he was lifting in a pair of jeans, which is so weird? It caused quite a storm in the popular culture. People were like, how's this guy look like this at 69? And people are speculating that he is on TRT.
I think he just said it. He admitted it like 12 hours ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So this is topical then. Yeah. Did you watch that? Did you or just read it?
No, we were just researching it.
You're right, okay. Yeah,
so it came up in social media or on the internet. Yeah.
So he was on Russell Brand, I think, an interview with him last week, and it kind of came up in conversation there. So what's your take on this extremely public figure giving an endorsement of hormone replacement or, you know, testosterone optimization, you could also call it, couldn't you? From this public figure. He's been criticized in some quarters and other quarters. It's like, well, you know, what's it got to do with you?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to just bring it to the public to create awareness about it. Because I do believe some men could really benefit from it. But I wouldn't subscribe it to anyone. So it's your choice. You do with TRT what you want, but I don't really promote it because I know, you know, there's the natural way and there are health consequences of TRT. And I don't really know how to dose TRT or inject. I don't know anything. So that's beyond the scope of my field. But I do know, yeah, some people can really benefit from it. And if you're older and, you know, your health starts declining, maybe it can reverse sarcopenia. You can hypertrophy your muscles and add quality to your life. And if that's the case, why not for like the last decade of your life, for instance?
I think it's important to have muscles when you're old or some muscular form when you're old, because you know that's what's going to power you through your old age instead of being old and frail, which means you've got no muscles on your body.
I believe my ideal is to build muscle and then have a bit extra, like a bit like 10% extra, and then maintain that as long as possible until old age. Because if you have too much muscle, you will lose it eventually.
Yeah.
So you need to find that like balance, what's like good for your constitution, and then keep that muscle mass as long as possible into old age. For longevity reasons. And
yeah, I think there's definitely issues with TRT, not least the fact that you're told that once you start it, you're on it for life.
Yes.
There's no going back. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, there is going back. Yeah. So I've met not many, but few men who got off TRT and, you know, their testosterone started producing again. So, but yeah, you do, if you do it for longer term, your LH starts to drop. So you basically...
LH is luteinizing hormone.
Luteinizing hormone that triggers testosterone production. Yeah, in the testes. So when your LH is completely down, because you inject continuously the replacement therapy, you basically shut down your own testosterone production and also fertility in most cases.
And if you stop, you're relying upon your testes to start up again.
And produce. And how do you start up if they have...
That's interesting. Yeah. How would you start them up again? Is there any kind of like kickstart that you can give them? Yeah, that's what we need to find out.
Maybe fasting.
Maybe fasting. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Because
fasting resets everything. Fasting is like, you know, if nothing can help you, then the only solution is to fast. Right.
It's probably, it might be the only solution, really. You know, I've done some, a lot of fasting. I've done a 22-day water fast.
Recently, right?
Recently, yeah. It was quite tough. You know, I spoke about it yesterday on the live stream. But I think fasting is nature's cure-all.
Yes, yes. And it's also the first kind of medicine, right? Because if you don't have any tools with you, no supplements, no herbs, the only thing you can do is drink water and fast.
But they can't market that. They can't sell it. No. They can't sell fasting, can you? There's no money to be made out of fasting, so they don't want you doing any kind of fasting. You
and
know?
The funny thing is, in the past, like 100 or 150 years ago, you had these sanatoria in Germany and all over Europe, basically fasting clinics. And maybe that descends from, you know, ancient times where there were like temples where people could come and fast. I don't know. But fasting is a very old medicine.
Yeah.
And it was quite accepted in the past. Like, and every religion has fasting, right? So people were way more religious back in the day. And everyone would experience periods of fasting. It's like very common to do so.
Well, you have some of the greatest spiritual, philosophical gurus of history, you know, Pythagoras, 40-day fast, Jesus, 40-day fast, Ramadan is a 40-day fast, Buddhism is full of fasting. It seems to be a universal theme that comes down to us from ancient history.
Because you stop distracting yourself, right? You stop distracting from the material. And food is the most intimate thing because it becomes literally part of you. So if you block that intimacy, if you block that distraction, then there's only one thing to focus on. That's your deeper, you know, concerns and questions about life, maybe connecting with something higher. that's what's only left to do, because you're basically, you're mimicking death in a way, because we know you can starve or die from starvation. But fasting is not starvation.
No.
It's voluntarily abstaining from food. That brings you closer to the creator.
It's a really great take. I was talking about something very similar yesterday on the live stream, and it's true. Is that when you're fasting, is that it's spiritual in the sense that you're detaching from the world and you're detaching from the consumerism of the world.
Exactly.
Once you stop eating, it has a knock-on effect to other things that you might consume, and you retreat in that sense. And all this, the phones, the computers, everything is designed to distract us from asking the deeper big questions of ourselves or even spending time alone, really alone, you know? I think that's what fasting can do, and that's where the enlightenment comes from.
Fasting forces you to sit by yourself eventually. So I would say a short-term fast, like 3 or 5 days, that's good for health reasons. But beyond that, it becomes more, you know, spiritual. After the 7-day mark, you start really like shutting your voice down, you know, energy preservation.
I obviously I fell short of my goal, which was 40 days. It was very ambitious, obviously, but I wonder what it is about that 40-day period, because it seems to be universal, this number 40 for fasting. I don't know. Hopefully one day I'll get to experience that, but there's something there. I don't know whether the body is truly cleansed of toxins or
your body
bad spirits or parasites. I don't know. Yeah. But after 40 days, it seems that Christ was ready to face the devil.
Yeah. I would say nothing gets really cleansed when you're fasting, because you shut down your digestive system. And that's also your main elimination system. So if you do something else like juice fasting, you still provide carbohydrates. So your metabolism is still running, and you provide antioxidants, vitamin C, all these nutrients that can neutralize the toxins. So that's actually more of a fast, I would say, or a cleanse for these xenoestrogens, for instance.
Thanks for being here today. I just want to take a moment to acknowledge your support, because without it, I'd be just another lonely YouTuber shouting into the void. You're the fuel that keeps this truth-seeking train chugging along. For that, I'm grateful. But listen up, my fellow truth seekers, if you're ready to take it up a notch and dive headfirst into the deep end of the rabbit hole, then consider an Eyes Wide Open paid membership. A VIP pass to a world of uncensored content and an opportunity to learn about real, actionable solutions. What you can do to break free of the system. It's just £5 a month. I mean, come on, that's less than what you'd pay for a watered-down pint of beer at your local hipster bar. With Eyes Wide Open, you'll be drowning in a sea of knowledge. Make new friends and have some laughs along the way. It's a win-win, my friends. Because let me tell you, independent content creators like me, we're the underdogs of the media. We're up against giant corporations with unlimited funding. We need your support. So, if you're ready to embrace the truth, shatter the illusions we've been fed, then head on over to lawrenceeastman.com or click that tantalizing link below. Together, we can pierce the veil, uncover the truth, and survive and thrive. We got on this because we were talking about TRT.
Yeah.
And it just morphed into a fasting conversation, which I'll always talk about fasting.
Also good for testosterone, by the way.
Right, okay. So that's a good remedy for people who are struggling with testosterone.
Yeah. So your baseline testosterone like crashes.
Yeah.
The longer you fast, the more it will go down. But then when you start refeeding yourself, it goes above baseline. So you have like a hypercompensation.
So what the, okay, explain that again. So when you fast, testosterone crashes.
Yeah, you feel that, right? You're you don't have much libido, you don't have much energy, you're not really driven.
When you refeed.
In the period of refeeding, your testosterone slowly goes up, and then when it reaches base, your base levels, it hypercompensates. So it's going to be actually more than when you started the fast.
So wouldn't that imply that short fasts followed by a potent refeed would
be like 3 days, 5 days are excellent to like reset your testosterone and have the hypercompensation.
What would you refeed with? When I broke my fast, I was delirious thinking about food. In the last 2 days, I was just delirious.
Yeah.
I was reading all my cookbooks.
Yeah.
I was going through them.
What will I
eat? Yeah, and I broke the fast with beef carpaccio. raw beef.
Okay.
Yeah.
On your 21-day fast.
22. Yeah, I broke it with a beef carpaccio. Mm-hmm.
And how did that go?
Amazing. It was just incredible. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I recommend following your intuition. That's mm-hmm. number one. So don't listen to anyone.
Yeah.
And of course, something seasonal and from, you know, close by. If it's like something foreign, that might work average on your or badly on your digestion. Nothing cooked, so it has to be raw. That's my main tip.
Mm.
Maybe broth, which is cooked.
Beef that's broth. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but something with fiber, so it can, you know, cleanse the intestines or move through. Yeah.
I did beef carpaccio, and then the next day I did steak tartare. Yeah.
Or raw meat, which is also excellent.
Yeah.
Because your body needs the protein. So.
Yeah, but you don't really use up your enzymes, do you, when it's raw as well? Because the food itself contains the enzymes.
It digests itself.
Digests itself, exactly, yeah. Because so I was all cool with the raw beef at the end of the fast, because I was super hungry by that point, and for a few days afterwards, but then I drifted off back to cooked meat, you know.
Yeah, okay. That quickly, after a couple of days.
Well, about 3 or 4 days,
okay.
Back on steak.
Yeah.
But no problem. But,
and you had to eat small portions, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because your stomach is only that big, isn't it? You know,
every organ is shrinking.
Yeah. Yeah, but I had no problem with the refeed. I did have a problem. It was probably more psychological than anything else, was there was a gorge period.
Yeah, you have to be careful with that.
And I did.
Otherwise, your stomach might burst.
Didn't burst, unfortunately, right now. So, but I could definitely feel this psychological drive.
Yeah, to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beyond what it should have been. So like for 2-3 weeks afterwards, it was still there.
There is this quote, everyone can fast, but not everyone can break a fast.
Right, okay. That's interesting, because I think that's definitely what I learned. Because I've done lots of fasts. Mm-hmm. I've done dry fasting for, you know, 4 or 5 days. Wow. No food, no water.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get past that point. But this was by far the longest I've ever done.
I met the guy who dry fasted for 13 days.
Yeah. There's loads of guys who do it. There's a Russian guy.
Yeah.
I forget his name. It's a weird name. But he's a white Russian guy. He's a...
Victor?
Maybe. He's a Hindu as well.
Yeah. I think Victor.
He does 30 days.
Mm.
No food, no water. Yeah. And he does it multiple times a year.
Yeah.
And when he breaks the fast, he doesn't eat much. You know, so he'll have a period of refeeding when he's not eating much food. He doesn't have much muscle tone, right?
But Yeah. The thinner you are, the more efficient your body is, I think, to fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a really fascinating topic because it kind of demonstrates that we don't need anywhere near as much food as we think we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in a sense, it's liberating because you're freed from another dependency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And fasting, you actually realize that you don't need anything.
You don't need anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're perfectly capable of just living this earth with not much.
Yeah.
And you become... I feel like I always become fulfilled after a fast.
Mm.
There's like a sense of peace and larger understanding.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But you can see why it's the antithesis of what the current system would want you to do.
Consuming.
Because they want you constantly consuming, not just consuming, whether it's content or whether it's food or water or the xenoestrogens that are in the environment.
Gorging
constantly.
Yeah.
So they want us separated from those ideas of internal wisdom.
And all of this consumption makes us unhappy, right? Because it's constantly novelty. It constantly triggers the dopamine pathways. And with fasting, you don't receive anything.
Mm.
So after a fast, you're so glad you can eat again, right? Or, you know, watch TV or consume media. It's like, wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool. So for people who aren't ready to fast, but they're ready to do TRT, What are the side effects, would you say, of TRT? Do you know what they are?
Yeah, I know a few. So injecting testosterone can spike your aromatase enzyme.
So that's the estrogen, is it?
Yes, that's the enzyme that converts testosterone and flips it into estrogen.
Mm.
And then you get estrogen dominance, like man boobs, fat deposition, hair loss, these kind of things. Because you're just injecting too much testosterone.
And the body converts too much testosterone into estrogen.
Yeah.
Well, sounds crazy, doesn't it?
So then, you know, many bodybuilders are on AIs,
aromatase inhibitors.
Aromatase inhibitors, yeah, exactly. So that's a downside. So you really need to have a good doctor who cycles the testosterone or who gives you personalized plan for that.
Because it seems it's like an elixir of youth in a sense, the way they sell it to men, isn't it? TRT is like, you know, you'll get all of your manhood back, the feeling you had when you were 25. All you got to do is jab. But you're told you have to jab for life. You said there's a few different exceptions to that. And it seems like it's part of the business model of Big Pharma is to create dependencies.
A membership
for life. And if you don't, you die. It's not like a membership you can opt out of. You know, it's like, look at diabetics. That's a relatively new...
Insulin.
People with stop taking it, you die.
People with heart disease.
So it seems that hormones, this hormone replacement phenomenon we're seeing now, because it's not just men.
Women as well.
Women
with birth control.
Birth control, and also, you know, the whole other weird area who are injecting themselves with different hormones. Yeah, it seems like it's very much part of the plan. And if we talk, you know, if we kind of have a conversation about what happened during COVID, you know, there was a dependency that they were trying to create for that, wasn't it? It seems that TRT may sound an attractive option to a man who's seeking to regain his vitality, but the dark side of that, the flip side of that, is that they've got you.
I think it's already difficult to get a blood test in the first place as a man. So if you are a young man, especially, they kind of refuse to do a testosterone check for you, which I find very strange. Only if you have severe problems, you know, if you say I have erectile dysfunction, then they will make like an exception. And then again, it's difficult to get a prescription for TRT. So you need already to be very low testosterone before you get a prescription for TRT. So I don't think Big Pharma is trying to push or sell steroids because you need a doctor's prescription.
If you're rich, though, you'll get that prescription, no problem.
Yeah, or they go to Mexico, right? Over the border or illegally, they get like all these steroids or human growth hormone. You can get it there in the pharmacies. So, but the Western pharmaceuticals strictly regulate testosterone replacement. So I don't think it's being pushed. I actually think it's being restricted.
Or do you think it's being restricted to a certain stratosphere of the population? You know, so they don't want the worker bees or the drones getting any ideas of becoming, you know, a Hercules. Yeah, so they keep that for a higher level of society.
Maybe, I don't know.
What are you doing personally?
Yeah.
In terms of how are you extending your knowledge and experience in this field to help others? Because I know you focus on a specific age range because you're kind of coaching people and helping people who are suffering from this. Tell us a little bit about that and how your approach.
My age range is actually quite broad. So what I can mainly help men with is low testosterone, get it to, you know, optimal levels, let us say.
What would you say optimal levels are?
That's really individual. So you can walk around with like 700, 600, but feel, you know, have muscle mass, feel like a man and be healthy. And then someone else needs thousands or more and have the same effect. Yeah. Wow. So I think it's very individual. And in the past, I was a bit jaded or, you know, I didn't knew that well that you could be optimal with, you know, average levels. So it's actually stupid to say this is average, this is high. Now I'm saying, how are you feeling? Are you feeling like a man? Can you build muscle?
If so, you're going off symptoms rather than blood work too much?
Yeah, blood work is important. If you are like 20 and you have levels of an old man, like 100 or 200.
Do you see many people like
that? Yeah, I just had a guy, 21, with a level of 170.
That's terrible. That's a terrible affliction to put
on. Yeah, so he's like skinny, losing hair, these kind of things. So I also help men with hair loss. Because that's also Big Pharma says that it's your androgens that's causing it.
And they're saying that testosterone makes you bald.
Yeah, exactly. And I found that that's actually not really true. Because then they cannot sell the finasteride, minoxidil, Rogaine, right? The hair loss medication. And erectile dysfunction. So these are like the main areas together with gut health, which is also an important factor in, you know, overall health.
Well, gut health?
Yeah.
So that's connected to this whole... matrix, is it?
Yeah, so if you have leaky gut, you most likely will have low testosterone. And that's
does the low testosterone cause the leaky gut, or does the leaky gut cause the low testosterone?
I think the leaky gut causes the low testosterone. And if you would inject someone with testosterone, I think the leaky gut will heal very fast. Because testosterone is like a Wolverine molecule. It like, you know, stimulates collagen and connective tissue production. It heals wounds faster, muscle repair. So it's like a hormone of repair. So if you have injured, you know, ligaments, joints, I think testosterone can help with that. And also injured organs like leaky gut.
So that's interesting. That's an interesting analysis of that leaky gut because could be a cause of low testosterone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we can take a step back there, then what would you say a cause of leaky gut would be? I mean, what is leaky gut?
Yeah. So your intestines have a cell wall, and all these cells are being stuck together with junctions. You could compare it to bricks and cement, right? If there are holes in the cement, you will have, you know, air and water could go inside the house. The same with your gut. So if you have holes or the junctions aren't tight enough.
Perforations, very small.
Yeah, like perforations. Yeah. The cells are basically making much space between each other, and things can migrate out of the intestines into the bloodstream.
So that's how you would toxify the blood.
Exactly. Yeah. So this toxicity in your blood causes whole body or systemic inflammation.
Right.
To your thyroid, to your brain. That's why you have brain fog. But then it actually affects you on a gonadal level. So it directly attacks the androgen receptors. So the LH receptor, for instance, on your testes. It causes testicular inflammation. And then, your factory can't produce testosterone.
Yeah.
That's how the leaky gut can...
What causes the leaky gut?
Yeah.
Diet? Food?
Diet,
environment?
Very high stress.
Stress.
Overtraining.
Okay.
This is an interesting one. Not many men know this, but if you train too much, like high intensity, too frequent, or a combination of both, the blood shifts from your organs to your muscles.
Mm.
And when your organs are deprived of blood and oxygen and nutrients, they're under stress, and then you create leaky gut. And studies done on, you know, people who overtrain show a 200 to 300 increase in leakiness.
Mm.
So 2 or 3x increase in leakiness just by overtraining. So if you train for too long, too heavy weights, for instance, you create this leaky gut scenario. And that's what I think many men are dealing with who are living, quote unquote, a healthy lifestyle. They're pushing it too far. They're too stressed. They develop leaky gut, and that's affecting their metabolism and their testosterone production.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because if what you're saying there is that if you can resolve leaky gut issues, potentially you could also restore your
testosterone. If that's causing it, right?
Yeah.
If that's causing your low testosterone.
But it's at least one thing to eliminate from the sequence, isn't it?
Yeah. And then, of course, grains and pesticides, glyphosate, these things also increase leaky gut.
Yeah, grains. Yeah. I don't think we're meant to eat grains.
No, tap water potentially.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everything.
Stop eating. Maybe that's
the answer. Yeah, stop eating for 3-5 days. And
that's good. So
fasting.
But I think that's a really good, valuable piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody can do a 24-hour fast. Everybody can, once they've done a 24-hour fast and they've beaten the psychological game that implies upon the body, then you can do 2 days, you can do 3 days.
Yep. Yeah, and slowly build up.
So you do 3 days a month, refeed, same every month. You're giving your body a chance to reset and heal the leaky gut and all of these other issues that may be plaguing the body.
Yeah, 3 days a month is excellent. Everyone can do it. It's not too difficult, and you will reap a lot of benefits.
It doesn't cost anything,
and
does it?
It doesn't cost anything. Maybe just quality water, but if you're already introducing that.
Yeah, but that should be part of your regimen anyway.
Exactly,
yeah.
Or you want to rent an Airbnb and, you know, a cabin in the woods, and you want to fast there, maybe. You want that, so that will be the only cost.
Yeah.
But then you're intensifying the fast. So.
But it is definitely an issue because on the long fast, if your partner's eating, you know, just food.
Well, fasting in nature is like an amplifier. It makes it easier.
Yeah.
And you're just less stressed. Imagine fasting for a week in an apartment.
I know.
That wouldn't be...
There's a Russian doctor, Dr. Filanov, amazing guy. He's one of the leading fasting doctors in the world. He's been treating people in Russia. He lives in Western Siberia, and he's been treating people with fasting for 25 years. And his main prescription is dry fasting. Right? And he says that I tell my patients to go into the mountains and be near a river, be near a running river, and that's where you should fast.
Yeah.
Because I guess not only are you fasting, but you're grounding, you're recharging the body.
You've got sunlight.
Yeah, there's a lot of purity up
inhaling
there.
Inhaling fresh air.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because a fast can become very stressful if you're already in a stressful environment. Imagine fasting in center of London.
Oh, God. I've done it a long time ago. Yeah. Yeah, 11 days. It was a lemonade fast. Have you heard of that one?
No. Like lemon juice and some honey.
And some maple syrup.
Maple syrup.
Yeah, but you know, after 3 or 4 days of that, and you're walking along you know, through Euston, and all you see is fast food. That's all you see is fast food joints. And you realize, you go, oh, this is a bit...
Yeah.
This is a bit crazy, but
fasting is the fastest way to health. Fast food is the fastest way to illness.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I think we're gonna bring part one to a close in a second, and my members will get the benefits of part two, in which you're gonna present some real world solutions, some methods that people can follow. So if they wanna begin practicing these things, or if they want to find out about their hormone levels, how to do the blood tests, what things they can do with their diet and exercise, that you're going to share that with us in part two. So for all of our members who are coming into part two, hang fire. You'll continue in a second. But for those of you who are just with us for part one, where can people find you online? How can they get in touch with you, follow your work? Yeah. What's your links?
So my biggest account is Instagram. That's Primal Thrive. Very simple. And on Twitter, it's Primal Bra, which is quite growing right now. So you can find me there and just shoot me a DM if you want to contact me.
So I'll put both links in the description below.
Yeah.
And if people want to seek your consultation, they can book a call with you.
Yes.
And just chat.
Yeah. DM me. And I also have a blood work guide, which is free. So I'll put links in my social media, or you can provide a link as well, so they can download the file. It's totally free, and it says like where you can test, why you should be testing, and what levels you want to measure.
Cool. I've seen that blood work document. It's really good. Go and grab it. Free. It's been great chatting to you. Kind of a lot of free talk. I've enjoyed it. Talked a lot about fasting, a lot about testosterone. I think it's definitely a topic that we will be returning to, because it's very hot and it's a phenomenon that I think it's something that we have to beat, because if we don't beat it, you know, society and men are just going to keep getting more drained.
Yeah, we already have amazing accounts out there on social media pushing the message. So I'm one of those.
Yeah, and definitely. Yeah.
We're changing slowly the narrative. So.
Cool. Great chatting to you. Thanks for coming in. Yeah. Have you got any last words that you want to say to our audience that they can take away from this conversation?
Don't stress too much about this craziness and get your levels tested. That's the first step to know where you are and if there's, you know, need to change something.
Dobrynya, Primal Thrive.
Yes.
Speak to you soon.
Ciao, man.